Welcome to Season 5 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
This season is proudly sponsored by Allplay. If you've been following my social media, aka Token Gay Mer, you'll see that my Allplay gaming table gets used on the daily when I'm not flying to different conventions. Between hosting meals on it as a dining room table or removing the panels and adding the cup holders for a Friday night game night as a board gaming table, it gets used constantly. It's also perfect for being a working station for me building my ridiculous amount of prototypes. It honestly gets used more than I ever would have expected. Not to mention, it's great for hiding games and their pieces from my cats. Sans is my little box sitter, while Nova tries to steal the dice as Banshee watches from high atop the cat tower. I've caught them attempting to take dice from Allplay's Sequoia and Mountain Goats, two of my favorite Allplay games that my non-gamer friends adore. We play a lot of party games, and these two, they don't mind me taking out instead. So check out Allplay's tables, bags, playmats, and board games at allplay.com. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 106, Tyr na n'og. Today we are joined by Jason Slingerland, a game designer and podcast host of Building the Game, which you have actually had me on. Thank you so much for coming on to my show now.
Yes, yeah, I'm excited to be here. It's weird to be on the other side of recording, actually. I was thinking that as you clicked record and we started going. I was like, this is what other people see. I'm used to being in the spot you're in.
I know, now you get to talk more, where typically you get to listen more when you're the host.
It's true.
Well, for anyone who doesn't already know your story, mind talking about your journey to finding game design and how you got into the community?
Absolutely. I've loved games my whole life. I grew up playing games, played very few like actual published games growing up. We played almost all classic card games, things like Euchre, which is more of a Michigan thing, but we played Pinochle, Poker, Hand and Foot was a really big game that I grew up playing. And so all these just kind of classic card games, trick-taking games and things. And that really, I think, has informed how I design games and what I'm interested in designing and playing. But it wasn't until around 2012 that I had started going to Gen Con and I'd really gotten into board games. I had like the lame story of like, I played Settlers of Catan with a friend and then was like, oh, this is really fun. And then I started seeking out more games at Gen Con and I would purposely buy the games that like I never would see anywhere else, right? It was one of my favorite things about old school Gen Con was back in like 2009, 10, there were so many games there that you'd never see anywhere else on any shelf or website or something. And I picked up this game called Lawless by Bruno Cathala, which I'm sure you could have bought in other places. But I played that game and something just clicked for me to where I was like, I want to design games. You know, I want to try this. And my friend Rob and I in 2012, Rob Couch, both said, let's give this design thing a go. And we started looking for resources and there was nothing. There was back then, there were no resources. Now we have so many amazing resources, podcasts and, you know, different things that can help you learn. There was none of that. So he said, what if we just start recording episodes of a podcast and kind of document our journey of learning how to design games and either serve as like a guide or, you know, a warning label. And I think we've done both over the years.
I mean, that's pretty much the designer journey is a little bit of both.
Yeah, right. And so we just did it very publicly and that helped us learn so much about games. And we've never actually designed anything together. And Rob's out of the industry now. But, you know, we went from these two people who said, let's learn how to design board games to, you know, I've got, I think, 11 games out now. And that it took a while to ramp up to start getting games out. I certainly didn't get them out in my first few years. Some people do. I was one of the, you know, the slow grower ones on that. I just found that, you know, as I played more games and designed more games, I just loved kind of learning and growing. And the podcast has been really helpful to that. I've said a lot of times that has kept me designing. There are times when I've wanted to quit and then realize like, no, this is really good podcasting. Like this bad stuff going on in this game world right now for me is really useful to someone else. So I'm going to keep doing it. And I'm glad I did. There are certainly times I think I would have given up without having the podcast as a support.
Oh, that's really interesting to hear because I know when I started my podcast, a lot of it was so I could passively learn. Or I shouldn't even say it was that passive because I passively learned through listening to other podcasts or reading other books. But interviewing designers that
I either admired or like games that I was like, oh, this game is so cool. How'd you think of this? It really helped me think about how I could be a better designer. Or just like, you know, sometimes you're curious and you want to know more about the things you love.
Yeah, for sure. And that is certainly like what I think is the ultimate scam of hosting a podcast is you get the chance to talk to so many people smarter than you under the guise of come on my podcast, but really I'm going to learn from you. That has been just super amazing in being able to do that.
That's so cool. So like, let's talk about your game, Tyr na n'og. How did this game come into being? What number was it of your, you said 11 games out?
Yeah, this was number 9 of 11, because two of the games will be out soon. So this was, it's the most recent one to be published. This game actually started with back in my first game design that I had published by a publisher. I had published my own game called Water Balloon Washout to see what self-publishing was like. And then Grand Gamers Guild launched their company with my title, Unreal Estate. That was a little city builder style game, but you weren't actually building a city. It was just a lot of drafting and scoring and set collection. And that game came out, did all right, as many games do. And then, you know, it was kind of done. And I had moved on from it. And then Grand Gamers Guild has gone on to publish tons of games and is doing, you know, great. As that was happening, my friend Isaac Shalev, another game designer, he really enjoyed Unreal Estate. He actually had designed for that game a rule for the two-player variant just through feedback that ended up making the two-player variant way better than it was. And so he really liked the game. And at one point he was hanging out with Mark at a convention and he said, you know, that game really doesn't fit in the line anymore of what Grand Gamers Guild is doing. There's doing some more bigger, complex stuff. And he said it would be really cool if we could do a new version of that that was more in line with what the company's doing now. So he came up with this idea overnight for just kind of like a rough gameplay of how it could work. Went back to Mark, the owner of Grand Gamers Guild, and Mark said, you should talk to Jason about that. Let's see what you can do. And so we sat down and started, you know, going back and forth over at the game. The time then the game was called Fairy Village because you were actually you were going to build a village with streets and you were going to have 5 houses on each street. And that was kind of the idea for the game. And Isaac came up with this cool concept for what we call the straddle draft, which is where you're placing workers between a grid of cards. You're placing them between 2 cards so that when it's time to draft, you actually have the option of which one to draft. But other people can be, you know, between those,
the other angle or sides, and possibly take it before you.
Yeah, the other angles of those cards. So there's a lot of decision of how bad do I want this card? Should I take the one first that's contested? And so that's what we went with the game for a while. Mark ended up signing it in that way. So it still had this kind of Fairy Village theme to it, but we knew we wanted a stronger theme for that. So we ended up working with John Brieger, the developer, and working with him, he kind of introduced us to this idea of this Celtic otherworld theme of Tyr na n'og, which I was semi-familiar with Tyr na n'og as a, like I said, Celtic otherworld that's kind of in these Irish myth cycles. But I didn't know a ton about it. I've learned a lot about it. So he kind of pitched that idea and did some work with that and then moved on to some other projects. And from there, you know, we worked to really hone it in to match that, to really make the game fit with the theme by changing it to where you're writing these songs and sagas about creatures and the stories and the inhabitants of Tyr na n'og. Yeah, so that's kind of the genesis of the game. I certainly have 1,000 more things to say about it. You tell me what you want to know.
No. I mean, I think that's really interesting, especially to like hear that the developer is the one that kind of helped you get to the new name of the game and kind of how to utilize what you were already thinking of these fairy villages.
Yeah, it was really interesting when we started. You know, I'm a theme first person most of the time. So, you know, when we were basing this on the Unreal Estate theme, we were kind of plugging away at that. And so I was nervous, of course, like switching themes mid-course can be done very well. It can also be done very poorly, right? To where like suddenly it's pasted on, you know. But I really, as we started to look at that and use the stories and the ideas to inspire the mechanics, I was really proud of how they tied back together. And, you know, I mean, because essentially it's a game with cards and numbers and colors. I mean, that's what it is, right? And you're drafting and then you're placing these to collect sets and to follow rules. But realistically, that's what it is. But we wanted to make sure that, you know, all of the mechanics really felt justified and fit with the theme. And we also, the theme was really important to us to get correct, because this isn't just a made up place, right? I mean, this is an actual myth from an actual culture. So we hired Nick Ferris, the designer and cultural consultant, to help us really understand everything around the stories and the myths. And he was fantastic. You know, he would go through the art with us, and Marlies Behrens did the art, and we love the art. Bridget and Delicato did the layout. And I personally, when it comes to graphic designers, I think Bridget is the best in the business. She's just amazing. But anyways, my point is, Nick would look at things. He would look at a piece of art and say, hey, you know, this looks great. But in the background of this picture, that doesn't make sense. This would not be there in that culture in that way. It would be in this way. And so, I mean, the kind of the depth that he went to really ensure that we were aligning it correctly, right? And really doing justice to that culture. He went through a lot to do that for us. And I love that, to know that it feels accurate, right? That it feels that we're doing justice to that.
And I know you've already mentioned a little bit of like how you play the game, but mine doing a little bit more of a deep dive, because you talked about the drafting, then you have like the set collection score, but like what exactly is it that you're trying to score? How do those goals work and all that stuff?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So the way that the game works in general is, at the start of the game, each player is going to get three what are called Gesh cards. And those cards are you're going to have three rows coming out in front of you. Everyone will have the same three Gesh cards. There'll be a top, a middle, and a bottom card for those three rows. And what those do are, those are going to tell you how your cards in that specific row are going to score points. And they may score points independently on their own row. They may score points by looking at cards in other rows that you have. But they are each going to score, you know, they're in the end of the game, you're going to have a score for each one of those. You know, some may be as simple as you want cards that are ascending by number, right? So you've got, you want to have a low card first, and then you're going to score based on how well you can ascend to higher numbers in a row. Others may be looking for pairs or, you know, different types of things. And then in addition to that, at the end of the game, there's a color scoring based on the colors of the cards and how those connect within the rows. It was originally designed, I still sometimes call it neighborhood scoring, because when it was a village, it was the neighborhoods, the color of the cards represented the neighborhood. But it's, you know, it's kind of how the saga ties together. Then the main way that you're acquiring cards is through this straddle draft. What I love about the straddle draft, and I'm really proud of the work that Isaac and Joe, the other developer, he works directly for Grand Gamers Guild, what they did with it was, so it's a grid of cards, but that grid changes in size, shape, and number depending on the player count, right? So that you always have the same physical experience of competition with other players for getting these cards. But essentially what happens is, each person has three storytellers, and you take those, you place them between two cards. Everyone goes around doing that. And then in reverse order, we go back around drafting one card at a time. When you draft a card, you must play a card. Now you start with five cards at random in your hand. So you don't have to play the card that you drafted, but you do have to play a card. You'll always be playing a card to the leftmost spot in one of your rows. So, you know, in the first play, you're going to be playing in one of those first three slots. As you start playing cards, that starts to really open up the differences in how you can play. You can complete one row at a time if you wanted. You can do them all at the same time. But eventually, at the end of the game, you should end up with 15 cards. Those will create your score for the end of the game. And then those Gesh cards that I mentioned that kind of determine the rules for scoring, there are multiple versions of those in the game for easy replayability of just swapping out different sets of those. And that's a really fun aspect of the game, is that, you know, you can have a different experience every time. As you get more familiar with the game, you can kind of pick and choose which ones you want. We, of course, have like a starter set that's a good one to kind of get you going. Oh, and then the cards, the one thing I didn't mention about the cards are, there are special cards. Quite a few of the cards have special powers on them that might allow you to move a card you've already placed, or might change values or colors of the cards around them. And we've got tokens for that that allow you to adjust numbers as you go, and to adjust colors as necessary. Yeah, so it all interplays really nicely together. It is a pretty easy game to teach. And, you know, once you get through one round, everybody really clicks with it pretty quickly, which I love to see.
And how did you end up with the publisher for the game?
That was because, you know, Mark was the original Grand Gamers Guild. They were the original publisher of Unreal Estate. So when this idea came up, we worked, you know, directly with them. We were still designing, you know, on spec with not knowing if they would end up taking it. But in the end, after seeing it, he played it one time and said, yeah, I want to do this game. So that felt good. Felt validating, you know. And can I talk a little bit about the actual publication of the game and how that's gone?
Yeah, please.
Awesome. So traditionally, Grand Gamers Guild has used Kickstarter for their games. They tried out GameFound with ours. And so the first version of Tyranidog was on GameFound. It did fine. It didn't make like a ton of money, but it funded, it did extra. And yeah, so they printed some thousands of copies, you know, feeling like it was kind of it was a one and done thing, right? And then some reviewers started to get a hold of it. And what ended up happening was the reviewers were incredibly positive about it and really enjoying it. And as players started to, you know, get a hold of it, it suddenly kind of built this like groundswell of excitement about the game, which was really awesome. But 2 weeks before Gen Con this year, it became very clear that we were going to sell out really fast of a game that we desperately needed more copies of. And I know you know about publication enough to know that that's not possible. You don't just snap your fingers to get more copies.
If only.
Yeah, right? Print on demand. So what ended up happening was we, right before Gen Con, decided with Mark that we would do a reprint Kickstarter with some expansion material that would happen 2 weeks after Gen Con. So that as people were asking about the game, we were able to say, hey, you know, we're out, but here, click this QR code, get the link to the Kickstarter. So it released on Kickstarter. It did very well. People were really excited about it. People responded really well. So it is currently ready to be printed again. There, you know, that's Mark's dealing with that and getting that all set up. But I'm excited about that. We did some fun expansion content for it with 6 new modules that you can add in called Blessings and Burdens that just allow you to do some different things within the game and just make it more replayable and add a little bit more. I'm really excited by the response to it and seeing that, you know, it is clicking with people in the way we really hoped it would. And then in addition to that, they actually, Ken Franklin, a designer friend of mine, got to design with Jonathan Chaffer developing a Journey to Tyranidog escape room. So it's, which I know you've seen the escape rooms from that company before too.
Oh yeah, the Holiday Hijinks have been an episode.
Oh great. So yeah, so this is in that same type of series.
Oh, so it's 18 cards also.
Yeah, it's an 18 card escape room called Journey to Tyranidog. And that was an add-on you could get from Kickstarter. And I think there's bright things coming in the future for this game too. I think you're gonna hear a lot more about it as it moves on, which is gonna be great.
First off, why switch it back over to Kickstarter? I know you said most of their games were there. They tried out GameFound. Was it just like we thought we would do better there?
So I don't want to speak for Mark, but my understanding is, you know, I think we've seen a lot of publishers try out GameFound, the game or two, and a lot of publishers end up back at Kickstarter. But I think that, you know, publishers explore their options and try these things out. You know, Kickstarter is very friendly for reprints, you know, if you're adding content to it. And I think that, you know, Kickstarter is obviously, it's more familiar to people, right? I think there are some big moves GameFound has made getting the big contract with CMON.
Yeah, I feel like when I think of GameFound, I think of them as more like they do the like heavy minis games, like the bigger ones, not so much the like card games like your game. I wouldn't have been like, oh, yeah, I would find that there. I would have assumed Kickstarter.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people probably made that assumption. I think GameFound is still trying to figure out exactly what it is, right? I mean, Kickstarter certainly went through those growing pains where it, you know, it was the Wild West for a while. You could like put a game up with half artwork and make like 100K back in the day. And it was ridiculous. You know, I frankly am glad we're past that because I don't think that was healthy for the industry. There was a lot of people making a lot of money with unfulfilled projects that were never sent out to players.
Oh, yeah. When I first got into the whole industry, I kept backing things on Kickstarter. I think I'm still classified as a super backer. Because I just went ham and I was like, yeah, that seems good. I want to support this. It took a long time to get a lot of those games and a lot of them were not good. And I was like, oh, now I like feel the need to at least have played or done like pretty extensive research, like watch some videos, read some rule books. Also back it if I trust the designer. I back occasionally new people, but typically I'll just do the like $5, like I want to support you, and then I'll like post that I backed it and hope that someone backed for the full amount if I'm trying to support my friends.
Yeah, that is, you know, there was a time when I backed every game that a friend of mine designed, and I realized eventually that I had too many friends in the industry and I was going to go broke.
Yep, and not enough space in my apartment.
No, yeah, in not enough time to play all the games, right? I mean, I think that is one of the really hard parts, is that there's just too many games. And also, just because your friend designs a game doesn't mean it's a game for you, you know? And I think that that is something that I've had to learn the hard way. I think that Grand Gamers Guild saw that there was probably a more built-in audience for this, for the reprint with Kickstarter. They have such a huge following on Kickstarter. And yeah, and like I said, I have seen several other publishers kind of attempt to try GameFound. And I think it's a hard switch, especially if you've already built a huge community on Kickstarter with multiple projects. You know, I think that that is one of the hardest things for GameFound to sell to people, right? Is they're like, we can give you better rates, we can give you these things. But in the end, I think there is the struggle of, if you have an audience built in here, how well do you transfer that? And that's something that I completely do not understand. So glad to see how well it went. And like I said, I'm excited for the future, because I do think there's going to be some really cool stuff moving forward with this game.
I also love that Mark with like Grand Gamers Guild is a smaller company, but has some pretty deep, like some pretty good product lines that are now starting to like extend into each other. Like the 18 card escape room system has now like got into Endangered. It's gone into yours. Started with the Holiday Hijinks, but it's such a cool thing where it's like, oh, this is just small product that, yeah, is like a one-time deal, but it's cool because like I can play it and then pass it off to a friend and they can play it. And it's just like a nice little almost marketing tool, just like a fun date night or like a friend night or whatever. Like I've played through almost all of the Holiday Hijinks now. I think I just haven't played the new ones that are going to be coming out. But yeah, I think it's like really smart when you're a smaller company to like build lines and support them using cross branding almost. Like I think it's a cool choice.
Oh, I think so too. And, you know, I mean, it's like when you add those games to a Kickstarter, anyone can pop in and like, just add that on for super cheap, you know? And I, when I had Jonathan on my show, Jonathan's been on Building the Game multiple times, but recently when he was on, we were talking about the 18 card escape games. And I think one of the things that I think is so cool about it is any game in that line could be someone's first game into that line that makes them end up buying all the other games in that line, right? It's not like you need to start at the first game because they are all separate. Well, some probably things do build on each other, and there are like spiritual sequels certainly within that. I think that a lot of it is just, oh, this neat thing, you know, I tried it. Oh, I like this. Oh my gosh, there's, you know, 12 more of these I could buy, and they're really not that expensive. And like you said, I think games like that are great for being able to just give it to the next person and say, hey, have fun with this, you know?
No, I definitely agree. I have very much enjoyed playing through those games and trying to figure out the system. Like, I did not realize how difficult it is to design in that system until I tried it myself, and oofta.
Yeah, yeah.
Twas rough.
Yeah. It is hard. I did, for our podcast community on Discord, I did this huge puzzle game that I just put out there one day. I didn't say anything about it. I just put it out there, and then people found it a couple days later and they started working together to solve it. And I had so much fun designing it. But like the number of times when I would be like, wow, they're not understanding this. Why are they having trouble with this one and not that one? And, you know, yeah. Like, you know, and I know Jonathan has said that is one of the harder things, is trying to figure out what is the audience going to get? What are they going to understand? What's going to be amiss? And I know he goes through a lot of playtesters with that for that reason, right?
It's also rough because you can only playtest it the one time with people, because once they've seen it, you can't really test it again.
Yep. And there's also the interesting thing with playtesters of most games. If you playtest Tyranid Og, you can then get a production copy of the game and play it. And you could certainly do that with one of these escape room games, but it's not going to be the same because you'll have already beat it. So that is really interesting to me of how that works. And they're beyond me for design. I do not have the tool set for that. I feel like I'm always impressed by Jonathan's ability to do that. I do know that I, like you, like if I try a style of game, a lot of times if I enjoy it, I'm like, how would I design that? You know, I think that's always a fun experiment, is to say, what can I add to this conversation around this type of game that would it be unique and would it stand out compared to, you know, just kind of retreading what everyone else has already done.
So then how long in total do you think it took from that initial inspiration to getting the first printing of this game out?
So COVID happened in there. I want to say that it was 2019 when we started the process, when Isaac came to me and said, hey, and I could have the dates wrong, but I know that I think it was 2019, and then COVID happened, and then we kind of did a lot of online playtesting of it and such. Later is when we really sat down to, figure it out and get it going. So, it came out, technically it came out in 2024 was when it was first released. Gosh, I guessed 5 years until it came out, which is longer. It really wasn't that long, right? I mean, there was just a lot of delay in there of us kind of waiting through COVID to figure out what was going to happen with everything.
Yeah, and I mean, you also have to think about the different cues and how long it takes for the art and the graphic design and going through the whole crowdfunding campaign. So, and shipping. Shipping got messed pretty bad thanks to COVID.
Yeah, yes. And I know that put Grand Gamers Guild a little behind, I believe. And, that is one of the things I think most people who don't design games do not understand is that the turn time. Like, even people who back on Kickstarter are like, oh, so it's like 6 to 8 months, maybe a year. It's like, no, double that at least, because all the stuff that had to happen before we could even put it on Kickstarter, right? And all the stuff that will happen even after you've gotten your game. So, yeah.
Oh, for sure. No, I mean, when you mentioned you're like, hey, you had a slower start in the beginning of this like episode. It's not even that it maybe wasn't even you being a slow start. It could have been like, hey, I signed a game like first try, but it didn't actually come out for like 3 or more years. It's rare for something to come out as quickly as like my experience with my games. Like I am an anomaly because typically you don't have like 5 games in a year or whatever when you're a new person.
Or yeah, if you do, it's because you've been doing it for 7 years and like they all finally are releasing, yep. I've seen some new designers who have just like games upon games upon games coming out. And it's funny because I remember talking to them last year at Gen Con and being like, oh, what games do you have out? And they're like, zero, but they're coming. And then, yeah, this year has just been like their year with all these games coming out. And that's got to be really exciting, but also a lot to happen in 1 year. So,
yeah, I definitely have a few friends like that where it's like they're going to be the most famous designer you don't know exists because they have like 6 games dropping in 1 year or whatever. And I'm just like, damn. But that's just how it all lined up, and it had nothing to do with what they wanted. Like, even when I say how many games I have, I'm like, I don't know. Coming out next year, I could have like 1 to 7 games out because I just have no idea because everyone's publishing schedules keep getting like wonky.
Right, right. Well, you've captivated my family with caution signs. I was going to say danger signs. My entire family thinks that's the greatest game ever made. I mean, I don't really care for it.
Wow.
No, just kidding. I think it's really great. No, I actually really enjoy it. But my family is so into it, which is fun, because when I was like, oh, yeah, I'm working with that designer on a game. They're like, wait, what? So it's like it got real for some of my family members. I'm like, you've seen my published game. Like, come on.
Thanks for the support for dad.
Also, what I didn't realize, I know you work with Scott Brady, like, and I know he worked on Caution Sites. What I didn't realize was that he designed Boop, which is my son's all-time favorite game. So like when we just made that connection, I was like, this is the same person who co-designed this game. He's like, wait, what? So that was pretty funny.
No, I love pointing out who Scott is and people are like, wait, the cat guy or oh my God, the color guy because of Hues and Cues. It's so cute.
And I knew about Hues and Cues. I just for some reason had forgotten he did Boop. So
yeah, no, the man's been on fire. It's so funny because like I technically have more games out, but his games are wildly more successful / known than a lot of the ones I've had out where it's like you probably accidentally bought it at a Walgreens where his it's like, oh, I intentionally bought it at a Target or online or whatever.
Well, that's like, I mean, like when you think of number of games out, I mean, like I have more games out than Elizabeth Hargrave, but that doesn't mean anything because she has the right ones out.
Exactly. Because people ask like what measures success in this industry? And it's like, is it money? Is it like the amount of games? Is it the amount of publicity? Is it the number they put on BGG? Like your game's got a 7.4 and that's like actually really good. Like anything above a 7 is classified as like a very good score.
Not to plug my podcast too much, but I'm building the game. Actually, episode 600, we did a thing where we had, gosh, probably 30 to 50 people just give like a short little recording of how do they define success in the board game industry. And the answers were so varied. And I just love that because there are so many different ways you can define success. as like, you know, is it monetary? Is it, you know, having an evergreen game? You know, I mean, like, is it having a ton of games? You know, it's different for everyone. And I love that, right? I love that about that.
I know. Or is it like, is it you being a full-time designer? Is that success? Or is it keeping your day job and just doing it for fun on the side? Like,
and they're all valid. That's the best part. So
definitely. While we were talking, I looked up Caution Signs. We're tied. So Caution Signs was also my 9th game, and it also has a 7.4. So twinsies.
Sweet. I'm gonna go give it a good rating. Maybe I can push you ahead.
Sweet.
So. I rarely remember to rate things on BGG.
So. I am also pretty similar, unless someone asks me like, hey, can you rate it? But I feel like I don't rate things poorly. I only rate things if I like them, and I've never given anything a 10. Like, unless this game is curing cancer, I don't think it's getting a 10 from me. Like, that's just kind of my thoughts, where I'm not going to give it a 1 unless, like, I'm playing a game with a foam gun that actually shoots me. Well, then, yeah, it deserves a 1 because it, like, almost killed me. Like, it would have to be a very bad experience for me to give it a 1.
The only way I think I would give a game a 1 is if it was, like, a willfully ignorant game, like, that was saying very bad things.
Oh, yeah. Or they, like, ripped off another game, very obviously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it would have to be something bad. I think that for myself, I tend to only rate stuff that I really enjoy, because I really don't trust the ratings on BGG to align with my feelings about games. I respect that they do help keep games in that are, you know, in front of people and stuff, and that that does hold a lot of weight with some people. But I've just seen too many people give ones for stupid reasons.
Oh, my game Her Story got a ton of ones, but it was mostly because the game was about women. So that was fun.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. They're like, oh, wow, women. That sounds woke. 1. There's a guy who goes around giving ones to everyone who has any sort of app that they use with the game. So, like, you know, Jonathan Chaffer's games, the High Low Hijinks games, use a link to a website.
They literally couldn't work without an app.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could, but it would not be 18 cards and it would not be as good. But, like, so I don't know. This person, I don't think, has hit all of his games, but that's an example, right? Of, like, they seek out games that use any sort of app, and they say, that's not a board game, that's a video game, and then they rate it a 1 without ever looking at the game. I always feel like when somebody routinely gives ones to games, that says a lot more about them than it says about the games that they're rating a 1. Because that is just, you know... if you feel the need to go rain on everyone's parade like that, you are probably a jerk.
Fair enough. Kind of in a similar vein, let's talk about, with your game, do you have a favorite and a least favorite moment? Like, did you have a jerk involved in some point or something else?
I don't think so. I mean, my favorite moments have been really seeing it click for people. I love when I see the theme click for people. That feels really good. You know, where they've like, wow, this theme, like, this is something I'm excited about. I haven't seen this before. I don't think I've really had a least favorite moment. I've not showed the game to anyone where it just completely didn't click and they were like, I hate this, right? Those people are out there. I just haven't played games with them. You know, I haven't played the game with them. But yeah, no, I mean, I think one of my favorite moments was my favorite and least favorite moment was realizing we were going to sell out at Gen Con too quickly and that it was going to be a problem. Because it was such a great problem to have, but also felt like a huge missed opportunity. But then we were able to turn it into a positive opportunity.
It wasn't the fact that both of us were not special guests, but on our badge said guest at Grand Con.
Yes, that was how you and I met. That was fantastic. Like, being able to, you know, meet there and get to know each other and play some games together. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you have one of the more rare experiences with me at a convention, because typically I'm crazy busy and always stuck in meetings and things. And you got me where I'm like, oh, let's just randomly play some games in the hallway at a hotel. And like, let's go do this. And you knock into me every day multiple times. And you're like, oh, I can't get rid of her.
This is why I think that conventions like Grand Con are so important, because you don't get this with all sorts of other conventions, right? Like, you don't get at Gen Con or even PAX. You and I saw each other like 3 times at PAX. Every time was a pitch. Otherwise, I saw you at the booth a couple times and said hi as I walked past. Like, that was our interaction, you know? Whereas, you know, at Grand Con, we hung out a ton because, frankly, who else were we going to hang out with, right?
Yeah, why would we want to hang out with the app guys or with Mark or like any of those people? No.
So we did also do those things. But like, you know, there's just so much downtime and it's really refreshing. I love it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I feel like my soul gets revitalized when I go to the smaller conventions. And I'm so appreciative that I got asked to like go there as a special guest and experience it, because it's not close. It doesn't make as much sense for someone like me to hop on a plane to go there. But I know you're like driving distance, even though you had some car issues.
Yes. But that gal, that all worked out. Yeah, no, I am. I'm 45 minutes away. So that's great.
Well, as a designer, like, do you have any pieces of advice that you would offer to other designers besides like listening to your podcast? I'm sure that's one of them. But do you have any other thoughts?
There are so many things that there's so many pieces of advice that I've learned over the years. But I think one of the ones that's been most in my mind lately, because I'm constantly seeing newer designers, I'm seeing success. And we both know that some of that success can be fleeting, right? You can feel like it's going to be successful and it's not. So one of the pieces of advice I've been giving to people, whether you're a new designer or an experienced designer, when you sign a game, when you have a great pitch meeting, when things are looking up, like, and you're like, oh my gosh, like this game, they are going to give me a contract. I'm so excited. Celebrate those moments. Don't worry about the outcome after that, because I've had plenty of games that were signed that never came to light. I've had games that were signed, then dropped, games that were signed and then were published and then didn't do very well and didn't do as we expected. I think it's so important to take the time to really focus on those moments where you realize this is what you love about what you're doing, and keep those, because it's so easy to get jaded, especially nowadays. I think there's so many tough things in our industry. That, like, you have to choose to celebrate those moments. And that might sound corny, but like that piece of advice has helped a lot of newer designers that I've worked with. And it's not just your, design in this way or something advice.
No, I like that, because I know even I've struggled with that, because in the beginning, I was just a little rocket ship and I was like, oh, I have news constantly, or like I had awesome meetings. But then I started to realize, like, in the moment, it was an awesome meeting, but then like no follow up, or someone would offer me a verbal contract, but never actually send the real contract, or they'd send the real one. And then I would send my feedback and then I'd never get an answer. And it's just one of those things where it's like that part after is kind of that roller coaster drop where like it's in your stomach and you're like, how much do I bother the publisher? And you get all in your head and you've like now initiated the whole messaging of anyone you pitch to, because it's like, I have an offer, message everyone. And then they're like, oh crap, well, I can't offer fast enough. Like, I've had things like that happen. So it's one of those where it's like, yeah, celebrating the wins is great, because you never know what's going to happen next. But just like be happy you even got to that point, because that's more than a lot of people can say.
Exactly. So, yeah, that is my cheesy advice to people that I guarantee will make you feel better about things when they happen in the moment. It may not change it long run, but at least you get that celebration.
Heck yeah. Just be like one of my friends who literally just has a bunch of champagne, just in case.
I love it. Love it.
Yeah. The dude always has something to celebrate. It's pretty funny. Well, do you have any projects that your fans should be looking out for that we haven't already talked about?
I've got some different things coming out. I have nothing that I can really talk about right yet. I mean, I hate to say that, but like, I think Tiernanog has a bright future, and things around that have a bright future. And I definitely, if you're not like in Grand Gamers Guild mailing list and stuff like that, definitely sign up for that at their grandgamersguild.com, because I think you'll see some cool stuff coming out in the hopefully not too distant future from them. I've got a little game I'm hoping to self-publish. We'll see how that goes. It's just a little 18 card storytelling game that I've been real passionate about trying to get out there.
Wait, is that the one that makes people cry?
It is the one that makes people cry, yes.
Okay.
And I play tested it again a month and a half ago, and it once again made people cry. But you'll be happy to know that I had to play it for the first time ever, because it's a story. I mostly don't want to play it because I don't want to mess with the vibe of the other people. But I knew these people, so I played it, and it made me sad too. So yeah, so I have got to join in on this. But despite the fact that it makes people sad, the feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. So that makes me feel like it's hitting the right sweet spot. So yeah, if you follow the podcast, you'll hear all about that when the time comes, for sure.
Well, then for my last question, unrelated to everything we've been talking about, if you could have designed a game that you're not currently the designer of, which one would you have chosen and why?
This question, I think, gets at the root of like, why are you designing games, right? Because like, the joke is like, oh, Settlers of Catan, because I'd be rich, that sort of stuff. But no, I think that like I was thinking back to the games that I love the most, and one of my absolute favorite games to play with my wife is Taverns of Tiefenthal by Wolfgang Warsch. That game kind of encapsulates everything I love about games, and the way that it works and the way that you upgrade things and how easy it is to teach everything. There's like no notes on that game. My only note for that game would be it comes with like 12 expansions and I will never play any of them because the core game is just too good to mess it up by playing with expansions. I would love to have been a part of a game like that for sure.
No, that was definitely a really cool game. I think I played it at Tantrum Con for the first time. Or no, maybe it was Q's Con. It was a small convention, so I actually got to play the game. But I thought it was really cute. I enjoyed playing it. Granted, I was happy someone else helped me set it up, because at first, it was like the first edition.
There is a lot of setup.
Yeah, and the rulebook was a little confusing on the setup, to be honest. I do remember that.
Yep. Once you get it down, we like package the game when you put it away so that it's easy to just quick set it up.
Yeah, the person did not do that before me.
Yeah, the game is the core loop of playing the game is so simple. You know, you're drafting dice and you're building a deck and it's real easy. But yeah.
Perfect. For everyone who's been listening to this episode, thanks again for joining us for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 106, Tir na n'og. And thanks again, Jason, for being on the show. For anyone trying to find you, I know you talked about how to find Grand Gamers Guild, but you personally, how can they reach out or listen to your podcast?
Yeah, so I don't do much of the socials stuff, but if you go to buildingthegamepodcast.com, there's a link there at the top to the Discord. We have a really, really nice, fun Discord community that's really supportive for designers, helping each other out. You know, we help each other with playtesting, design and development, all sorts of stuff. Everybody helps everybody. And I think the big thing I'd like to mention is if you want to hang out every week on Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern time, we have a 30-minute check-in where everybody just gets together and hangs out. You get 2 minutes about to talk about what you're working on and to hear what everyone else is working on. And it's a super supportive, fun atmosphere. It can be accountability. It can just be hanging out. It can be whatever you need to be. You can even just come listen to what everyone else is doing and not have to talk. I'm really proud of that. And so buildinggamepodcast.com, link to the Discord, join it. It's great.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll have to check it out at some point. I didn't realize you did that 8 p.m. Eastern thing. It sounds kind of fun.
It's super fun. It's really good. We've developed a lot of good friendships and community out of it.
And then for everyone who's been listening, you already know my voice. I'm Danielle Reynolds. And if you're looking to find me on social media, you can find me on Instagram, X, Blue Sky, under Token Gamer. And that's spelled G-A-Y-M-E-R. Thanks, Jason. This has been fun. I'm looking forward to your future games and the future of Tir na n'og.
Thank you. It was great to join you. Had a good time.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcast.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.